Well, today's story, I think, is perhaps a little bit more in tune with our times than particularly the first story we read, which took place in Palestine. But even the story last week was dated a little bit. It deals with a department store Santa Claus. And who would have ever thought that I'd be sitting in a church reading a story about a department store Santa Claus? But this particular guy, his life has some surprising turns, and I think you'll feel that we're justified in dealing with him. The author of this story is William Kennedy. He is a man who likes to write and tell stories. He also writes church songs, but primarily he practices law for a living. But every year to celebrate Christmas with his friends and his church family, he writes a new account about the people of fictional Yellow Springs, where ordinary people do extraordinary things and sometimes learn something new along the way. Bill lives in Malvern, Pennsylvania, with his wife and two daughters. And today we have a story that tells a tale of sin and forgiveness and the blessings of what God has done for all of us. The story is entitled The Last Child in Line, and again, it's by William D. Kennedy. To the weary, bloodshot eyes of Ned Gruber, the seasonal Santa impersonator at the Yellow Springs Mall, the most wonderful sight came at 6 o'clock on December 24th, because that's when they finally extinguished the glaring blink of red and green lights around Santa's village in front of Quincy's department store. Each night during the holiday season, Santa's two oversized elves that bore an uncanny resemblance to the uninspired students in Ned's history classes at Yellow Springs High waited for the dimming lights to signal the time to pull the silver tasseled cord across the back of the children waiting to have their photo taken with a jolly old Saint Nick. So far this year, more than 800 children had climbed atop Ned's lap in just 40 days, each with their own secret wishes and dreams for Christmas morning. Ned considered himself lucky if by 9 o'clock on a regular night, there were only a handful more of children left in line. If so, he might have time to slip into Santa's workshop to change his clothes before the mall closed its doors at 9:30. More often than not, however, Ned found that those last kids who were unpressured by any significant backlog behind them took much more time per child than those earlier in the day, and he'd still be sitting on his Santa throne well past closing time. Tonight seemed to be no different, although being Christmas Eve, they closed at 6. As the 53rd child of the day slid from his padded knees, Ned glanced over his artificial glasses to see how many more visitors remained. The line curved away from his view, which meant at least 8 or 9 more. With a tired sigh, Ned nodded to an elf, indicating it was all right to let the next child come forward. The frightened little boy, he couldn't have been more than, say, 3 years old, Ned figured was practically dragged up to Santa, screaming and crying the whole way. His visit was just long enough for the flash of the instant print camera. As the frustrated father led away his tearful son, Ned made an instinctive retreat into the workshop and grabbed the flask of liquid courage he always kept nearby. He raised it toward his lips, but then he stopped. No, he thought. I promised myself I could make it through this week without any Christmas cheer, and I've come too far now to give up. When Ned took the Santa job 5 Christmases ago, things were different. That first year, he was actually disappointed when that last child passed off his lap. But then he worked to earn some extra spending money for his wife and infant daughter. But in the next year, Ned found himself living alone in a one-room efficiency above the Crow's Nest pub after two disastrous affairs. The first was with a new English teacher who had had a home room across from his, and it lasted only until his wife and girlfriend found out about each other. The second affair was with the bottle. It began shortly after the first affair ended, and it had continued until just 4 days ago. From that time on, Ned's seasonal role as Saint Nick was a way to keep him from the loneliness of a bar stool during the holidays. After he surrendered his visitation rights, he had hoped his wife might bring their daughter to visit Santa. That first year after she changed the locks on him, he actually saw her in line, but his wife must have learned who was behind the white beard because the little girl never made it to his lap. Given how poorly he had treated his wife, Ned didn't really blame her. Since then, playing Santa let him see joy and excitement in a child's eyes, none of which he had seen since he last laid his eyes on his three-month-old baby. A six-year-old boy named Dwight was next in line. After climbing onto Santa's red corduroy lap, he demanded to know if that was really him at the Thanksgiving Day parade, and if so, why hadn't he waved back at him? Ned was used to this type of cross-examination by now. In fact, he had heard just about every imaginable question pop from the mouths of doubting children, and he prided himself on smart, persuasive answers. "Yes, Dwight, that was me, all right. I was looking right at you earlier, but you were watching the float in front of Santa. Santa always wants to say hello to all the good boys and girls. Now, what would you like me to bring you tomorrow morning?" Ned had found that this deft redirection of the conversation towards presents almost always worked. He would then lean down towards the child conspiratorially, nodding his with feigned interest, and as if he were memorizing the child's list. At the same time, a small microphone tucked under his artificial beard carried the child's secrets to his parents, who listened in on a small earphone over by the exit from Santa's village. The electronics had been Ned's innovation a few years ago. He had found that some kids would only reveal their wishes to Santa, and when parents approached him later, he was rarely able to remember which child had asked for what. Allowing parents to eavesdrop made him the most popular Santa in the whole area, a fact which the mall did not overlook in his paycheck. After Dwight was a little girl. She was a little older than many. She had had her faith in Santa shaken when she found the microphone hidden in his whiskers as she hugged him. But Ned was ready for her. "Sweetie," he explained, "Santa is very old, and he doesn't hear so well anymore." I can relate to that one. "This little thing is a special kind of hearing aid that helps Santa hear your secrets better." The girl considered this and found it logical, and then began to confide her own special Christmas dreams. Ned had found that children had grown smarter over the past few years. The next child had heard that Santa was at Pepper's Discount Mart, and he wanted to know how could he be in two places at one time. "Well," Ned began, "Santa's everywhere, all the time. That's how I can see you when you're sleeping and know when you're awake. Even when you can't see me, I can see you." That, followed by a question about presents, had ended the inquiry. The following child was a borderline non-believer. He accused him of being a fake. Her big brother said there was no such thing as Santa. And Ned demurred these coming-of-age confrontations. "Well, sometimes people believe things in a different way when they get older. But maybe old Santa can prove himself to you. How about if I tell you now, right here, about something special I'll leave for you?" Not anything big, mind you. That would make your big brother jealous. But something that you and I will know is a special sign that I'm as real as you want me to be. Then he suggested that their special sign would be a shiny red apple in her stocking. Ned knew that his microphone system was working when the children would come back next year and thank him for leaving that special apple. After that came a belligerent 8-year-old who demanded to know why he hadn't gotten everything he had asked for last year. Ned responded with a brief interrogation about his behavior over the previous months, gently pointing out the need for improvement, but assuring him that there would be some pleasant surprises under the tree this year. The next child wanted to know how come presents from Santa came in boxes from the people who made things for the toy stores. For that, Ned had pulled out his explanation about how there were so many good boys and girls that the elves at the North Pole couldn't make enough toys, so they hired out other companies to help them. As an unusually chunky lad tumbled off Ned's lap, he glanced at the clock and saw it was almost 5:30. One of his elves, slumping against the camera tripod, held up one finger, indicating there was only one more to go. The mall lights were already being dimmed, and Ned could see shoppers filing past the guards that were stationed at the door. His back was sore, his shirt was damp with sweat, and his knees ached as one final believer approached him, and she approached him hesitantly, but on her own. Despite his weariness, Ned felt a strange sadness at this moment. After this, there would be no more kicked shins, no more drool on his cheek, no more ear-splitting wails, and no more pulling the beard he had spirit-gummed to his face. It also meant no more cuddling with happy children, no more smiles, no more squeals of delightful ecstasy as a little one saw Santa in the flesh for the first time. Ned summoned his last burst of Christmas enthusiasm for the little girl he hoisted onto his lap. 4, maybe 5 years old, he estimated. "Hello, sweetie. Merry Christmas. I know you've been a good girl this year, haven't you?" And she giggled coyly. "Uh-huh." "Good. Now tell me, what can Santa bring to your house for Christmas?" The little girl smiled confidently at him, as if he already knew what she would ask for. "If I tell you, you have to promise to bring it, okay?" Ned had heard this one before. "Well, Santa does his best, but I can't promise anything. That's against the rules, you know. What is it that you want to see tomorrow morning?" "My daddy," she said. The request startled Ned. He had heard a lot of kids ask for a lot of unusual things, from world peace to a baby bunny instead of a baby brother. But he had never been asked to produce a father before. "What's that, honey?" Ned feigned hearing hard of hearing while he thought about how to proceed. "I said," she repeated with the patience of a school teacher to a daydreaming pupil, "I want you to bring my daddy for Christmas." "Tell me, sweetie, where is your daddy?" The child just giggled, as if she were too smart to fall for Santa's trick. "You know, you're Santa." Ned laughed along with her, chuckling his best ho, ho, ho of the season. "Oh, but it's late, my dear, and I've been thinking about all the presents I'm going to bring you. Can't you remind old Santa where your daddy is?" "Mommy says he lives in a very special place where they don't let kids." Ned quickly considered the possibilities. The special place sounded like either the military or prison. "No, not the military. The mother would be proud of that, and the girl would probably know where her old man was stationed. So it probably had to be prison. Well, honey, Santa will see what he can do, but sometimes people have to stay in that special place for a long, long time. I don't know if I can get your daddy out so soon. The smile on the little girl's face never faded. Oh, yes, you can. You're Santa Claus. If he weren't so worried about how to let this child down without disappointing her, Ned would have been amazed by the girl's limitless faith. Instead, he tried to steer her to safer pastures. Well, what else would you like for Christmas? Maybe there's something special that I can leave in a hiding place that only you and I would know about. That line nearly always worked. The child would confide about a secret spot, like under a chair or behind the curtain, and the microphone would carry the message to the parent, who would see to it that a particular gift would be there on Christmas morning. Ned figured a trick like that was good for extending the onset of disbelief by at least a year. But it didn't work on this little girl. I don't want anything else, just my daddy. Last night when I said my prayers, I asked Jesus for daddy, and now I'm asking you. Oh, great, Ned thought, just great. The kid's faith in Santa and God was tied to a prisoner's release at Christmas time. He leaned forward in the chair, trying to see over to where the mother would be listening in on his conversation. Maybe the mother would give him a signal to let him know whether he should promise something. Ned strained his eyes, staring into the darkening mall, but the little girl blocked his view of the exit where the mom would be. Still, Ned knew that someone had to be listening in on their conversation, so he asked, "Now, when you said your prayers last night, and when you asked Jesus for your daddy, was your mommy there with you?" "Come on, lady," he thought, "give me some help here." "Yes, sir," the girl answered with a seriousness that reflected her understanding that prayer was a mature, grown-up activity. "And mommy said that if I asked Jesus, and if I came here tonight and asked you, my daddy would come home for Christmas." Bingo, thought Ned, now we've got it. Wherever this kid's dad is, the mom wouldn't have risked destroying her daughter's innocent faith unless she was pretty darn sure that the old man would show. "Is that right, sweetie? That's what your mommy said?" He looked over the girl's shoulder toward where the mother had to have been standing, hoping for a confirming nod or something. At first he saw no one, but then he saw movement in the shadows. Then the dim light caught her anxious, almost frightened expression. Ned's heart jumped and a shiver jolted his spine. If she was the mother, then he was the father of the little girl on his lap. In a cracking voice, Ned repeated, "You're sure that's what your mommy said?" The woman, his wife, looked at him. She looked hard and her eyes glued to his and then nodded. She would let him come home. She wanted him to come home. Ned felt lighthearted and slumped back in his chair. The girl on his lap was no longer visitor 889. But rather was Emily Sarah Gruber, named after his own grandmother. He couldn't see it now, his wife's soft, gentle chin and sharp eyes. Tears filled his eyes and ran down his beard as he hugged his daughter tightly. He buried his head in her shoulder. The little girl seemed confused, but she hugged Ned back anyhow. "Santa, what's the matter? What are you sorry for?" He hadn't even realized he had spoken his apology out loud. He released his grip and sniffed hard, trying to resume his role. "Oh, Emily, dear sweet Emily, Santa is just so very, very sorry that he didn't bring your daddy home sooner. Your daddy will be there tomorrow morning." Emily's eyes widened. "He will? You promise?" Ned nodded. He said, "I promise. You can tell your mommy that Santa said so." Emily threw her little arms around him as tight as she could. "Oh, thank you, Santa. Thank you. I just knew you could do it." Ned kissed the girl's head. "But you have to do Santa a favor," he told her. "Thank your mother, too. And tonight when you say your prayers, I want you to thank Jesus for me, too. Will you do that? Those two have a lot more to do with your daddy coming home than old Santa does." Emily vowed she would do just that. She flew off his knee, calling excitedly to her mommy. And Ned watched his daughter as she told his wife all about Santa's promise. Ned wanted to call her then, but he was too choked up to speak. His wife handed something to Emily, who ran back towards him, cutting under the felt ropes that lined the exit. "Here, Santa, this is for you, from my mom." She handed him a little red box, then leaned up and kissed her father on his cheek. As she ran away again, Ned pulled the ribbon and opened the package. Inside was a shiny new brass door key, and there was a note, and it read, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish, but have everlasting life." "Christmas is for new beginnings," the note said. "Please come home." Ned rose from his Santa's chair, but by then his wife and his daughter were gone, lost in the crowd of exiting shoppers. "Hey, Santa," one of his elves called to him. "We're done here. Don't you have someone somewhere you ought to be going?" "Yes," Ned replied quietly. "I'm going home."